What's up, everybody? We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henderson Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
A Shot of Lime production.
Henry, wow, wow, wow. UFC 305 went down last night from Perth, Australia, Perth, Western Australia, and it was a really good card, I would say. A really, really good card, capped off by the middleweight title in Dricus du Plessis, defending that belt against former two-time middleweight champion Israel Adesanya. It was as advertised. It was a fight that was built up completely. It was really, really big build up, and the fight delivered. We saw some back and forth momentum changes, and eventually Dricus was able to get the takedown, sink the hooks in, and get the submission. Henry, where were you watching this? And how did you think about the fight? How'd you take it?
Yeah. First and foremost, Kamaru, I mean, you're a smart man. I think he knew better than to bet the Triple C, because you're about to have, you know, a couple eggs crack on that shiny head of yours. But this fight, it did deliver. And I tell you what, the person that really surprised me too was Israel Adesanya. I mean, he went out there. He looked so good that first round with his fakes, his feints. He was doing a lot of reads. But I just felt like after the first round, like there wasn't a lot of risk taken on Israel's side. And then as the fight kind of went a little bit closer, or a little bit, as the fight started getting more towards the end, I feel like the gas tank of Israel Adesanya started kind of diminishing and going down. But Israel was doing a really good job with his fakes, with his feints. Defending the takedowns, getting up, investing in the body. I mean, he was doing such a good job that I don't even think Israel really knew the fact that how he was breaking down Dricus du Plessis, DDP. But he was doing a really good job going to the body. But I just feel like there's something that comes with Dricus that's just different. Like, he's kind of, like, unstable. He, you know what I mean? He's unstable. Like, he's not necessarily crisp and smooth. He's not necessarily a sniper. He's just a goer. But he was able to get those takedowns. And he did hurt Israel Adesanya with that overhand. And then pretty much you saw Israel kind of stumble a little bit. And then that takedown, once you're weak or whatnot in the knees, and that takedown just did it. It's not like he was super smooth as jiu-jitsu. I mean, he went in there, took him down. Israel fell to his hip, and it's almost like there was no urgency with Israel. Like he could have been in a position where he could have gone out a little bit early, but he kind of just stayed there. So I'm not sure if it's father time, what people say, but Israel was doing such a good job, and then all of a sudden, I personally felt like the fight was going towards his side, Kamaru. But then all of a sudden, it was just Israel lost. You know, that's my assessment. He was doing really, really good, investing the body very well, and then that was it.
Yeah, I think you have to – it happens like that sometimes. And I think you have to give credit where credit is due. In Dricus du Plessis, there's moments in there to where he really showed – his mixed martial arts savvy, and you will see it, because he's not the sharpest, he's not the cleanest, but there's just got to be power. I remember, it's been a while, been a few years, but I sparred him way back in the day, and I don't remember. I always knew he hit hard, he swings hard. But now I feel like he's confident in that power, to where if you really watch him, when he throws those big shots, both legs aren't on the ground. This guy must have some power, because both legs aren't planted on the ground. He's almost leaping into the shots. Henry, you see him leaping into the shots, to where it seems like those shots are hurting his opponents whenever he connects those shots. But what really did it for me is his all-around savviness in the game. Because if you see in the times where he gets the takedown, he instantly advances to the next dominant position. It's takedown, hook, over backpack. Takedown, hook, backpack, taking the cage away. Or looking for the choke. And you could see it in that finishing sequence there. It was almost he hit Israel with a couple of big shots to where he had Israel hurt a bit. And then once he got the takedown, it was immediate. It was almost like while Israel was hurt, he just couldn't. You know, when you're hurt, you're not firing that fast to understand that I need to defend the next move and the next move and the next sequence, to where it was almost because of Israel being hurt in that sense. He got the takedown, instantly moved to the next position, hook in, backpack on the choke, to where it was almost Israel reacted late to figure out that, hey, oh, no, I'm in a bad position now. Oh, I need to look for the hands, but hands aren't there. And he's looking, hands aren't there. And then it's next thing you know, he's tapping. As you see him here, he's just chasing him. Hook, he hurts him. He takes down right away, hooks in, and Israel, boom. Before I know it, he's already around the neck. And, oh, let me find the hands. Where are the hands? They're not there. And next thing you know, it's too late. So hats off to Dricus du Plessis. I mean, he just showed that he is. Now you have to give him that respect. He is. Of course, I always respected him. He's a champion. But now everyone has to put some respect on his name as the middleweight champion of the world, because he went out there and did it.
I'm actually going to go a little further than that, Kamaru. Not only are you going to have to call him the middleweight champion of the world, but you're going to have to call him the king of Africa now. come on, man. No, am I hitting?
Why would you? Okay, but explain. Why would you say that?
Because that was the whole debate, Kamaru. That was the whole debate of him. That was the whole thing on who is, you know, the real African, I guess, quote unquote. And I don't think it has to do anything with race, really. Like, because I also understood where Dricus was coming from. You know, it's like, hey, I'm born here, I'm raised here. Yeah, it's like I'm another breed. And I think he was saying that I'm quote unquote. I'm the true African champion. You know what I'm saying? I think that was like the biggest. Anyways, you know, this is the whole marketing thing, but overall.
I want to just kind of.
I don't want to hit any strings.
You did. Because I saw the debate to where it got to. For me, it was a little untasteful. Well, not a little, very untasteful, because this is how the division continues to perpetuate. Division is continuously perpetuated. Was Israel born in Africa? Yes. Was he raised in Africa? Yes. Until his family moving him out to look for an opportunity. Now, we can try to not say race all we want to and not say race all we want to, but if there's anything that we know, especially being in America right now, Henry, you and I, if there's one thing that we do know, is that the color of your skin does play a part. Yes or no? It does.
When we talk about America, though, Kamaru, America's the world, bro. You have Chinese Americans, Mexican Americans.
But, Henry, you're absolutely right. But is there a difference?
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay, so you're disagreeing that the way that the color of your skin does not play an impact in the quality of life.
Not in America, man. I don't think so. I think that's all subjective. Look at a guy like LeBron James.
Hold on one second. Like, okay, so you're telling me if you get pulled over, or one of our producers gets pulled. No, you have to answer that, because we already opened the can of worms. You're trying to say that if we got pulled over, you got pulled over, or I got pulled over, we would be treated the exact same way.
I can't answer that because I'm not black.
I'll answer it for you. Absolutely not. We will not be. So let me just answer that for you. We will not be. And so tying that back into this is. Wanting to clear, I understand it was a whole marketing thing for Dricus du Plessis, which he might have not necessarily meant it the way that Israel might have taken it all the way, but you have to be careful, because it's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. You have to be careful with what you say, because now we're in a position to influence the masses in the world. So with power, I say it all the time, with great power comes great responsibility. When you have that platform and you have that mic in your hand, you have to be careful what you say. It's just like people treating you different, saying, oh, you're not real Mexican because you're an American. That's not true. you understand that you respect your heritage, Henry. And so we have to pay homage to that. So to say, oh, I'm the real African, that's completely crazy. And for you to say that a perpetual, oh, he's the real African king. I know you're just joking, but it's not. This is how the division continues to be perpetuated. Dricus du Plessis is the fourth African champion right now. So there's four horsemen.
Yeah.
So we've moved on from the three kings to where now it's four horsemen. So to continue to perpetuate this whole, African king or this or that, that's ridiculous. And that's why hopefully we can get Dricus on the show so he can continue. He could talk more about that and clarify that, because I feel like people are twisting his word to where everyone is carrying on that, hey, Dricus is an African champion. He's the African champion because everybody wants to be funny because he's white. And that's completely wrong. He's an African, 100%. Is he a champion? 100%.
But that's exactly my point, Kamaru. You know what I'm saying? That's exactly my point. If the whole, I mean, the whole skit was about who is the king of Africa. I mean, it's what it is, man. Like I don't want you to think that I'm also freaking. It's a storyline. Like, it's cool. There's a guy that was born and raised. There's a guy that was born there that is black, that was raised somewhere else. So I can also see where a lot of this was kind of taken out of context, or these guys decided to kind of fight or whatever. But at the same time, too, Kamaru, it's not like I look fucking French, dude. Like, you think I look Italian, dude? Like,
no, exactly. Like, so like, if you like, were, you know if what you I'm were, saying? So if you were in France, do you think they would treat you different?
I was just in France. France is just like America, bro. It's a melting pot. It's flooded with different cultures and colors. Where you can be an Arab French, and you probably don't even speak fucking Arabic. You know what I'm saying? It's like a lot of Mexicans that are from Mexican descent that are in the United States that don't speak a lick of English. But oh, I'm Mexican. I'm like, okay. So tell me where you were born, and then tell me where you were raised. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, this is a whole nother subject.
It is.
You're right. I would love for a guy like Dricus to be on it. Not for my sake, but maybe for your damn sake. Because to me, it's just all fun and games, dude. It's like these guys were able to shake hands, a black and a white, a white man and a through race and a black man, and they were able to say, hey, man, we did this. Like, at the end of the day, you know who won? Africa won. And, you know, like I said, man, I wasn't trying to hit any heartstrings over here.
No, you did, and the reason you did, Henry, is just because that's the world that we live in. Yeah, but narratives are wrong. It's wrong, and that's what we're trying to correct. You know, there's too much hate out there, and that's what we're trying not to perpetuate. So yes, you're right.
I agree 100%. This is why when people say I'm an American, I'm an American, they call me a sellout. Like, oh no, you're Mexican. I'm like, well, I wasn't born there. I wasn't raised there. That's my heritage. But how can I say I'm something that I'm not? It's out of respect for the people of Mexico. I go down to Mexico, fucking my family calls me a gringo. It's like, oh yeah, that's that gringo. That's that, you know, that's Nelly's son. Yeah, he's, you know, his Spanish is all right. Like, it's not 100%. He's a poser.
Yeah.
Like, no, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. And culturally, we'll dive more into this. Hopefully we get Dricus on the show to where I truly want to talk about this, because I think it's something that is extremely important. I mean, the whole pandemic and riots and situations of that is based on this exact subject, where we saw that in the whole world and how the world was feeling. So, you know, I would like to just talk more about it with him. But going back onto the fight, I think we have to give our props to Dricus du Plessis, because I saw a little clip of the work. I saw a little piece of the work when he would come down here to Florida and train with Henry Hoof over at H Kickboxing. We got a chance to move around a bit. So I know this guy's been putting it work for years. And to see him come to full flourishing of him being a middleweight champion and defending that belt against the best ever middleweight champion, it's amazing. Hats off to him. And this is what I mean by what I'm saying, Henry, is before that fight, I tweeted and I posted a picture. I posted pictures and I tweeted. And in the caption, it said, I believe, Africa tonight, Africa wins. And if you go on my Twitter, it's just so much, oh, yeah, yes, this and that. And I'm just like, Africa wins, period. So Dricus is a great African champion. I mean, carrying that forward and basically just bringing that continent, just continuing to carry that flag for our continent. So it's you see me in that shirt. You see that shirt? Hey, he's going back up there. Ooh, with that lace joy. Woo! With the lace joy.
That looks like a freaking. That looks like
don't
a.
Don't you say it. Don't you say it. Pause, honey. I gotta pause you right there. You know that's your first pause of the day. I gotta pause you right there. But all in all, fantastic fight. And Henry, where does Israel go from here? What do you think? Because a lot of people were thinking he was going to retire, but you saw him at the end. He said, "I'm not leaving. I'm not fucking leaving." So
yeah.
And
I get it, bro. Cause I've been in these positions all the time. I think if he was to get dominated, I think he'd really want to maybe call it quits. You know, cause his legacy. He's. I tell you what, dude. I am a bit of an Israel hater, but I am a fan, dude. For a guy that doesn't have the level of grappling, that doesn't come from wrestling like we have, Kamaru, to be able to do what he's done, beating guys like Romero. You know, Robert Whittaker, a couple of times I was there, Paulo Bochini, and the fashion that he did. I mean, I got a lot of respect for that dude. So, I sometimes, even when Israel loses, I kind of get a little bummed out, dude. Like, I really do because he's great for the sport, man. He's flashy. He hypes it up. Yeah, sometimes he might be the king of cringe. He's saying some crazy shit sometimes or doing some crazy shit. But at the end of the day, man, he gives back to the sport. He brings a lot of eyes, and you have to respect that. But that moving forward for a guy like Israel, I think he's still there. I think the next person maybe in line is maybe he gets a fun fight, and maybe does a rematch with Paulo Bochini. I think he does a fight with Paulo, and he waits for the winner of Dricus and Strickland. He beats him. And he's back in the title picture again. That's the beauty about being part of the UFC is it's narratives. So to going back to can you create storylines? So even going back, and I don't want to kind of dig into it a little bit more, but even going back to the whole thing with Africa, there was a storyline, a narrative that was there, and I think Israel gets it. And he understands it, and I think he could pull that off. So if I'm Israel Adesanya, I'm looking to fight. I'm looking to fight a troll in Paulo Bochini to get, you know, to do a rematch, Mr. Secret Juice, a winnable fight for him. And then he just waits and sees and hopes that a guy like Sean Strickland wins. And then, boom, he's at the title once again. Am I too far off, Kush? Am I too far off?
You're not too far off.
Dude, I don't want you attacking me this whole damn episode.
No. I never attacked you. I just want a clarification.
I got a shank, man. You know, you want to Mexicans and blacks.
Hey, no, don't go there. Don't go there. Okay, but what you're saying is why would we go Bochini, who has lost to Israel Adesanya, has lost to Sean Strickland, has lost to Robert Whittaker. Why would we go to Bochini when
because stylistically, because he's done it already before.
Yeah, but
you don't want to give Israel this time. You do.
Give him new blood. Give him something that's going to be intriguing. And there's intriguing fights right now. You've got the French dude Imabov. That is going to be a fantastic fight. You've got Khamzat Chimaev, which was the buildup for potentially that middleweight title picture when Israel was champion.
Those are
fantastic fights. Those are huge, and those are amazing fights to where I actually think you can't say that's not a good fight, because we've had this debate before, and we both agree that what happens when Israel Adesanya gets back up from Khamzat Chimaev, what happens when he's able to not get taken down, stand there, and starts to sharpshoot. We had that debate before. No, I like his chances.
So, here, go back up, Ryan. I'm going to go ahead and read, guys, the top five. The top five middleweights. Sean Strickland, number one. Israel Adesanya, who's number two. Robert Whittaker, number three. Imavov, yeah, you're right, at number four. Cannoneer, number five. Yeah, I like that. I think screw everything that I just said. I'm with you, Kamaru. I think he goes Imavov.
Imavov, that's a fantastic fight. Both guys are strikers. I think that's the fight.
I think that, of course. And then hopefully he waits and sees what happens with a guy like Sean Strickland. If Sean Strickland wins, the UFC is giving him that rematch. And it's simple.
No, Sean Strickland is next in title. He's already just beat Bohachinia, so he doesn't have a fight scheduled, I don't believe. But look at you. You've got guys like Brandon Allen. You know, shout out to Brandon Allen. You've got guys like Brandon Allen. You've got guys like Marvin Vettori. Obviously, Israel has beat him twice. Brandon Allen is there. So you and Hamza Chimaev, yes, although he is sitting at 11, that guy is maybe one or two fights away from a title shot. So we can't, and we know that he is the biggest hype in that division. And I hate to use the word hype because he is a skilled fighter. But he's the biggest one. Whenever a Khamzat fight is announced, there's a lot of buzz behind it. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're right.
Exactly. So Khamzat Chimaev going out there and finishing one or two more guys, he's fighting for the title. I'm telling you, he's fighting for the title. So let's agree. We're thinking the next, if he has to fight, the next fight is Nassourdine Imavov. Should Imavov get past, I believe, Brandon Allen? I believe they're scheduled to fight.
Really?
I believe Imavov and Brandon Allen are scheduled to fight. So
For sure. No, I like that. I like that. I'm not mad at it. But the other thing that Israel could do too is he's got fun fights maybe at light heavyweight, dude.
Really?
I know he's always talked about it. I mean, there's a cool fight with him and Jamal Hill. I mean, they're both strikers. This shit ain't far fetched. If he picks the right fight, that's true.
But he said it yesterday.
Like Poltan has. Like, man, he can fucking fight for the light heavyweight strap too. You know, go after a guy like Yuri Prochazka. Why not? He's only gonna strike.
Speaking of Poltan, he throws his name in the mix again. I mean, this is brilliant from him. This is brilliant. You just announced your fight. But there's an opportunity for you to throw your name in the hat again, which just brings more and more, the algorithm brings more attention to you, to where more people now are speaking your name. So now he's saying there's a possibility that he might come down.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then they're going to skip Sean Strickland. They're going to skip him because the bigger name, the UFC will, the UFC, they always want to get these big fights, especially if they're both champions. And another thing that Poltan is doing, because I don't know what's going on with him and finding a guy like Khalil Roundtree. I like Khalil. He's a hell of a dude, but knowing a little bit of his history, the fact that he's number eight, I forget who his last opponent is, but dude, at the end of the day, man, he's dodging Ankalaev, man. He's dodging a guy. He's dodging a guy that's just that.
Well,
that's
what, is that his complete fault?
It could be. He could influence it. Why Khalil Roundtree? When you have the number two contender in the world that he has not fought, and everybody wants to see that fight, and everybody truly do believes that, yes, a guy like Alex Pereira does have the belt, but does it mean he's the best in the world? Like, you know what I'm saying? You could be a UFC champion, but it doesn't mean you're number one in the world. And I feel like a lot of, and this is when we had this conversation, Kamaru. I can see why you don't put a guy like Alex Pereira in the top five pound for pound, because he's strictly being given guys that are just benefiting his style. I want to see him tested. I want to see him tested against a guy that could wrestle, a guy that could strike, a guy that's a very well-rounded striker, man. You know, the only fight that I could think of was against the Polish Power. But the Polish Power had even lost to Ankalaev. He actually even admitted it. Like, dude, I don't know how or why this fight went into a draw. But whatever that may be, there's a lot of drama going on at light heavyweight. And there's a lot of, you know, there's gonna be, if there's drama at light heavyweight, it's gonna be more drama at 185 pounds because Sean Strickland could get skipped if Alex Pereira says, hey, I'm going down to 185 pounds once again to recapture my title.
I get that, and it is what it is. I don't think, obviously, us being champions before, I don't think it's solely Alex Pereira saying, yeah, I don't want to fight that guy, or I don't want to fight that guy. I think I think when the company's, like you mentioned, the company's going to do what's ultimately best for them and what's great for everyone. So I don't necessarily believe that, hey, it's fully strictly him saying, I want that guy. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's the fight that's been announced, and if he decides that he wants to go down, yes, not only will Sean Strickland potentially not get the shot, but also the guy that's rightfully deserving of it, which even Dricus du Plessis mentioned, Robert Whittaker. Robert Whittaker is going out there. He's taking all the heads that he's being given, and he's knocking them all out. And so I believe that he is the rightful next guy for that title. But with that all being said, we'll go to our co-main event. This one's one that I want to say shocked me, but didn't shock me. Kai Kara-France, man. I mean, for a guy that's, I guess you would say for his what he lacks in height, he makes up for it in intelligence. Because this man understood that I might be the shorter man, I might have the shorter reach, but you know what? Instead of throwing one or two shots, I'm gonna throw three or four. Continue that combination, and eventually I will get myself to the target, and I can potentially get that finish. And he does such a great job of lateral movement, setting himself when he's ready. See that? He'll throw that 1-2. I'm still out of range. Follow up. And if I need to throw a fifth or a fourth or fifth shot, I'm going to follow up again. And what just an amazing job lining him up, getting Steve Irsay to line up. And Steve Irsay, fantastic fighter as well. Great stance, great distance control. But Kai Kara-France, I mean, the power in this man's hand. Henry, I was low-key scared for you. I know this ain't your weight class no more, but I was low-key scared. I was like, babe, Henry, these dudes might get a hold of you, and they might have to put hands on you.
Yeah, but who knows, man? I may be coming back down, cush.
Sit, relax.
But that being said, Kai Kara-France, he was you can tell there's you can tell there you can tell Steve Irsay, he's dangerous, man. Like as you said, cush. He has good range. He's a great technical fighter. But there was one thing that he was doing wrong, and he kept just going straight back. And if you notice what Kai did, he did it a few times, and he was catching him. He never really made that adjustments. Rather than him, maybe a guy like Ursa moving out laterally, he kept going back, and that's what allowed Kai Kara-France to throw that right hand, step through with it, and then eventually catch him with that left. So it was a risk that Kai was willing to take, and it worked out for him. But if it wasn't for that fight, man, dude, I felt like Steve Irsay was getting the better of him. More technical strikes, controlling the range and the distance a little bit more. But as you said, Kai Kara-France is a dog, man. He proved us both wrong. We both thought that Irsay was going to win, but Kai Kara-France did it. And do I believe that he deserves the next title shot? 100%. 100%. He just beat the guy that a lot of people thought he'd beat, a guy like Alexander Pantoja. Give him the fight. I was there. I was actually coaching Tough 24 when Kai Kara-France and Alexander Pantoja ended up fighting. So I was able to watch these guys fight. It was a very close fight. But this was back in 2016. I mean, we're talking about 8 years later. Now these guys are, everybody's still fighting. I think it's a time to have a reunion and have these guys fight once again.
I agree. I wanted to disagree in because of just we haven't seen him in action very, very often lately. And so coming off of a loss, I believe, in Kai, and then being able to go in there and do that with Steve Irsay. I would have liked to see more before just throwing him into a title shot. But you're right, Henry. I can't disagree with you. He made a case for himself coming off of two losses. He made a case for himself as when you go out there and you stop the guy that just challenged for the title and potentially, arguably, could have went either way in winning that title. I think that that's definitely deserving of a title shot. And so I won't disagree with you. I wanted to say give him a guy like Manel Kopp, but with Manel Kopp stinking up the bed like that in that last fight, I say now Manel Kopp fights Steve Irsay for who's next for that title shot after Kai Kara-Francis fights Alexander Pantoja. And why not? Put him on the same card. If Steve Irsay, with respect, if he's healthy enough and he's willing to jump in back in, I say why not? Manel Kopp, Steve Irsay, Kai Kara-Francis versus Alexander Pantoja.
Wow. Well, there you have it, dude. We have to be careful, man. You might take the damn matchmaker's
job. I like that.
You're too good.
I like that. Go ahead and throw me another check, Dana. But, hey, that was an incredible co-main event. But we moved down to this fight, and this is, I think this was potentially fight of the night. Besides, obviously, Israel Adesanya and Dricus du Plessis. But I think, other than that, I think this is the fight of the night. Dan the Hangman Hooker taking on Matheus Gamrot. And I told you, Henry, I did say, this man is dangerous. This man has a tendency to win these kind of fights because he just doesn't care. He doesn't care. He's just having fun in there. And you saw it going into that third round. He's sitting on the stool. And you know what my man said? Coach is just trying to get his attention. They're trying to give him water. They're trying to talk to him. My man just looks up with cuts all over his face. And he says, man, I love this shit. I love this shit, man.
Damn.
My man said, I love this shit. Hey, shout out to Dan the Hangman Hooker. I mean, this man had a lot of ups and downs in his career, but he continues to go in there and give incredible fights. And I'm not mad at the decision. I give it. Gamrot was doing a good job of getting the takedown, but he was just control. He wasn't landing any strikes. He didn't put himself in position to potentially try to finish the fight. And then when they were standing, Dan Hooker was having his way with those body shots.
Yeah.
So I'm not mad at the decision. It could have gone either way, but I'm not mad at it, Henry.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, I will say this about I like Dan. I think he's doing I like the new Dan with the new tattoos. You know what I'm saying? So I am gonna go back. I'm no longer gonna call him, you know, cheap, but I'm gonna call him a one-legged. You know, the one-legged hooker. he was able to get up, and a lot of those guys at City Kickboxing, they do a good job of going here, but also getting up to their feet, just like Israel, just like that we've seen this. Even Kai's a guy that's able to get up too from bottom, and I think that's the base of MMA. Can you, if you get taken down from bottom, can you get up? When you're on top, can you hurt somebody? But then again, and then you have those guys that are, but then again, can you defend a lot of these other techniques too? So it's a lot more complicated than that is. But that being said, I mean, honestly, I thought this was a perfect matchup for a guy on paper, for a guy like Gamrot. But you know, the new Dan is different. You know, he's got the new tats. I don't know who hurt him, but whatever it is, he's doing something right, and he was able to get the victory. He proved me wrong.
But the one thing, though, that I thought, it just shows that he's just in a position to where he just loves the job. He just loves what he does. He loves fighting to where I felt that he squandered an opportunity at the end there. He squandered an opportunity to give a clear, concise call out after that fight, because when you put on an incredible fight like that and the world is at your fingertips, they're like salivating to hear who you're going to pick next, who you want to rumble with next. And you said, I want everybody. I want the title. I want the BMF title. I want this. I want that. I didn't get a clear consensus answer of who you wanted, so the world can start helping you get that opponent and saying, hey, yes, 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 that fight. But nonetheless, fantastic job. Dan Hooker, My man. And Henry, quick question. You know, quick answer. Who would you like to see him fight next?
Talking about Dan Hooker? Dan Hooker. Man, I think, you know, this fight with Gamrot, I felt like that was, you know, Gamrot only has 3 losses, dude. He's 23-3. You know, I think this was his 3rd loss for a guy like that. But if I'm looking at the top 10, I'll probably put him up against a guy like Benir Dariush. You know, I think, or a Rafael Fiziev. I think Fiziev would be an awesome fight. Would be a banger. It would be on the feet. You know, there's a lot of fun fights. You know, you got that Moicano fight too. You know, I mean, there's the 155 pounds. I think he can choose anybody within that top 15. That'll be extremely, extremely fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of names in there of potential opponents for him, and we'll wait to see what happens. But hey, Henry, Bam Bam Tuivasa taking on Jairzinho Rozenstruik. First of all, I'm going to let you give your assessment on this fight. What did you think about this fight?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, the person that I was impressed with was really Rozenstruik, dude. I let you know how good Francis Ngannou is, man, because this dude was very diverse with the striking from knees to kicks. Like, the way he mixes his striking, man, my respects, dude. I think Rozenstruik is, he's a hell of a striker, dude. But I go back and I want to think how good Francis is to be able to knock this dude out within the first freaking 45 seconds, you know. But he's really good. He's very technical, and the dude could last. I mean, the dude, he's smart, dude. He's a very smart fighter. I was super impressed. I think with, you know, Tai Tuivasa did his best. I mean, this is a very technical heavyweight match that I really enjoyed, but I think the biggest thing that I'm gonna say is you got to be careful where you fight, dude, because one judge had it, you know, 30-27 for Tai Tuivasa. Yeah, did he hit him? Yes. Did he win a round? Probably not. But that's just the way it is, man. I think even going back to that Dan Hooker fight, like, you know, that 3rd round, dude, it was Gamrot's. I mean, how many judges were able to give it to a guy like Dan? So not taking anything away from Dan, because I saw both. I mean, the fight could have gone either way, but, you know, scoring and judging could be a little tricky, and particularly when you're in a fan favorite environment. And I think Ty did his best. Ty completely, he lost 30-27, but somehow one judge had it 30-27 for Ty, and I'm just sick. I'm just sick to even think.
I agree.
About
there was it. A couple of fights where it could have been it was 30-27 to where I was like, wait, I know for a fact this guy lost a round, and the judges gave him all rounds. So yeah, I think this judgy system has to get a little bit better, because it shouldn't be that big of a disparity. But nonetheless, Jairzinho Rozenstruik was able to just footwork, able to keep moving his feet, able to use that jab. And a couple of times it looked like he had Tai Tuivasa hurt, but it shows the durability of Tai Tuivasa to stay in there. And it was a decision. But, you know, hats off to Rozenstruik now, I believe, on a 2 or 3 fight win streak. So now we move into my favorite of the night so far. My favorite fight. I was shocked. A lot of surprises in this fight. You're my boy, Carlos Prates. It don't matter how you say his name. My dog. Hey, my dog came in. Hey, first and foremost, I had to do a little digging on my dog. And you realize, hey, my dog speak English. We thought he speak no English, because I think I've seen a fight where he had a translator in there. He speaks English well. Came in bumping that Ross. Yeah. Did you hear him? Did you hear about it?
Did he?
Hey.
Did he? What did he
come off to push it to the limit? Nah. Is that the only Ross song you know, bro? Jesus.
Man, that's the one that might be the only Ross song that I like, but yeah.
He came in bumping that Ross. Hey, he a cool dude. Went in there and he was dangerous. And he delivered action. I mean, going to just looking at how comfortable he was in there. how sharp he was in there. I mean, there was a point where he's slipping shots like this. He's rolling with shots. He's bouncing around. Look, my man looked good. He looked good in there. And I think there's some up-and-coming welterweights. Like, it's like, wow, this guy's a welterweight. Look how big he looked compared to Li Jingling. And Zhi Liang, I know I'm butchering that last name, but we're talking about Preitez, and he did a phenomenal job being able to bounce in and bounce out, keep Li on the end of the shots. And when he was able to find the mark, I mean, dang, this was probably one of the most devastating knockouts that we've seen this year. And we've seen some really, really good ones. I would say this one has to be close to top 10 that we've seen this year.
Yeah, right. Well, not just that, Kamaru, but man, even prior to the knockout, he was hurting him, bro. I was really surprised that the referee just stood there. I was just like, this is going to have to stop it from just the punishment and the damage that a guy like, you know, Carlos Pratas is. You know, he reminds me of a lot like Alex Pereira. Lanky, very, you know, his composure, you know, he likes to hurt people. He presses people. He kicks straight punches. The dude is dangerous, man. The dude is very, very dangerous. And he's a big-ass middleweight. I'm sure the UFC is already thinking, all right, man, let's do the same thing that we did with Alex Pereira. Let's give him the right matchups. You know what I'm saying? Because we still don't know how good he is being tested wise on the grappling. And as you know, a lot of Brazilians are really good at jiu-jitsu, but with MMA, it's different with that top wrestling. But the way that he's able to surgically take his time, break people down, and hit him with straight punches. Like, he punished Li from round one until the finish came. The dude's dangerous. If I'm a welterweight and the UFC tries to match me up with him and I'm a striker, I ain't taking that damn fight. But if I'm a welterweight and I know how to wrestle, I'd be like, hey, you know what? Give him to me. Let me put him in a position that he's never been before. But he's a dangerous dude, Kamaru. He's a dangerous, dangerous dude. And I feel like, you know, I feel like there could be another superstar in the making in this
guy. I agree. I do disagree with you. I don't think he's anything like Alex Pereira. And I think he's different. He's a special, special guy with the way that he's able to set up knees to the liver, put you down, to the way that that left hand is long. That left hand come from the, and he's also really, really good at throwing it from the angle to where he get, it's a missile that's still going, and it gets there. And let's talk about Lee's ability to not get his hands up. To not get his hands up. Even when he was taking shots. Hands do not come up. I don't see hands go like this. Let's protect our face. Look at that. Hands do not. Look, I'm really hurt, severely hurt here. But look at hands. Where are my hands? Look at hands. I'm taking shots. Where are hands? Look at this. I'm against the cage taking shots. Where are my hands? Whoa. There's a reason you have these is to protect yourself, defend yourself. And he just couldn't get his hands up. And he was just like, once he started sniping, jeez. I like this guy. I like this kid. And he's I got a new favorite, I think, up and coming in that welterweight division. I got a new guy that I like that I'm going to keep my eye on because he's doing the right things. I like this dude. I wonder if he got the bonus. I don't know if he got it, but I like him. I like that. That was beautiful. Great job. Great fight, too, because Li was no slouch. Great fight, but he was able to go in there and make it look easy. And so
Okay. All right, matchmaker. So if you're a guy like Dana White, like how do you build this dude? I think with a guy like Pratas, I think you give him 3 more fights, allow people to get to know him a little bit more. and then start cracking them into potentially the top 15 after those three fights, because you want to make sure that these guys get, you know, a UFC experience. There's different between fighting elsewhere and then fighting the actual UFC, like the comfort level. And I think there's a good three fights, and then you crack him into the top 15 and then see what he can do from there. But the dude is the dude is dangerous with the hands. But again, Kamaru, I want to see, is he the full package? We know he could strike, but how good is his grappling, and particularly his wrestling and his ability to get the hell up from the cage?
I like what he said at the end too. When he gets on the mic, he said, yes. And it seemed like he was trolling a little bit. He said, yes, UFC, give me one more easy fight. He was trolling. He said, I want one more easy fight. Then I believe he said maybe on to the top 15 or a ranked guy. But it seems like he understands. He knows that let me get experience in here. And of course, let me make a little bread. Because if I'm making him look like that, I like that.
And you know what, Kamaru? He reminds me a lot like Ricardo Mayorga. Remember Ricardo Mayorga? He used to fight, he used to drink, smoke cigarettes. I mean, this dude, like Carlos Plata, he's the type.
He does kind of look like him.
And it's not an act, dude. Like, he will literally smoke a cigarette, like pre-workout, after workout, because that's just who he is. He's happy, he's confident, and I think people are going to be able to relate to him. And like I said, man, I think if he does continue to keep winning, he's going to be a superstar in the making.
I agree. Lots of good fights on the card, you know, in the prelims as well. You got Volta Walker, Johnny Walker's brother, was able to get a submission win. You had Ricardo Ramos, another fight in there where this guy was compromised severely, but he was still able to pull off the victory, the split decision win over Josh Koulibal. You had Casey O'Neill, who went out there and put it on the Brazilian princess, Luana Santos, that they were building. I mean, the girl gets a win. She does the little dance. But Casey O'Neill said, none of that. Nah, I'm here at home in Aussie, and I'm not doing that. And Casey O'Neill, I mean, just a chick surprise. I like Casey O'Neill. I like this girl. Yeah. She's ready to scrap each and every single time when she steps in there. And she put on a fantastic performance. And so... I like Kate. She looked very improved. Her grappling exchanges, her stand up was just superior. So,
you know where she's training, right, Kamaru? She's training at Fight Ready now. She's been able to have Angel, my brother, be able to coach.
Way to plug yourself, Jesus.
Santino DeFranco, Eddie Chan. No, I don't work with her. I don't think I've ever spoken to her.
No.
She's at the right place, man. She's at the right place because she's getting that right attention, and they're able to adjust. And I text one of my coaches yesterday, Eddie Chom. Like, dude, she just put the brakes. I mean, they were trying to build Santos, but you can tell Santos is still inexperienced because Casey O'Neill brought the pressure, brought the level changes, and she was able to counter a lot of the judo throws that she was trying to do. Casey O'Neill, if she continues to keep firing like this, I can see her being a title contender in the near future.
I completely agree. And you are right, Henry. They over there at Fight Ready, they got her completely ready, and she looked amazing from start to finish. She looked incredible. So hats off to Casey O'Neill and putting on a fantastic performance. And was I wrong about this opening fight in the prelims? Herbert Burns taking on Jack Jenkins, and Jack Jenkins looked like a guy with a bright future. I'll tell you that. He went in there and he put it on Herbert Burns from start. He put it on him. Combination was great, and where I felt that Herbert Burns would have the big advantage, if he's able to get the fight there and really get that sense of urgency, is in the grappling exchange. But he got the fight there, but there was really no sense of urgency. It was more like he just wanted to hold on and kind of clear the cobwebs from the shots that he's been taking. But Jack Jenkins was able to get back up and able to find the finish. It was a fantastic one. A phenomenal performance for Jack Jenkins, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, either way, UFC 305, it was good from top to bottom. It was. I think some of the judging was completely suspect, and I think, you know, I think there should be suspensions, and particularly that guy that gave Ty to Tuivasa. I was going for Ty, but I also want to be fair. And as we're pulling up the damn scorecards, Kamaru Usman, now you can see, now start bending the knee right now, because you know who your king is, and that's right, that's King Triple C. I was, you know, three out of the five I got correct. You know, for you, you got two out of the five.
First of all, let's just talk about how I don't know who I'm starting to get suspicious here, underdog. I don't know who's doing the research here, but y'all doing a hell of a job with this research here. Look at Adesanya, landed 97 significant strikes, and the pick was, I believe, 95 or 92?
92.5.
Like, what? Where?
Yeah.
And not Spit. Just...
I love it.
And not just that. Look at what other fight was it? Ty Tuivasa. The Tuivasa fight. Significant strikes. Over 16 and a half. And this one was really close. There was a couple of times where this one could have ended. And he, I believe when he had about 13 strike, maybe in the third round, this fight could have ended. And I'm just like, wow. Whoever the underdog guys are here, they doing their research. And you can see, obviously, in the Gamrot, in that top one, the one all the way at the top, he four or over, and he gets approximately four takedowns. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. Underdog, I see what y'all doing here. Y'all doing your homework, yeah, so you know what? We need to do a little bit more research, Henry, and we're going to make sure next time.
Shit, I have
been. We ready.
I have been. I got sick of losing, dude. And this is all based on stats. And how good do you really know mixed martial arts, dude? So, you know, I could have gone 4-for-5, which would have been, which would have been really big money. But it's what it is, man. I got close with Dricus, you know, going for that fifth takedown. And then obviously, you know, the biggest upset to me of the night was Kai Kara France knocking out Steve Ursic. So overall, I'm happy. Like I said, Kamaru, bend the knee, because I am the King Triple C.
Listen. Let me tell you something, Henry. There will be more L's in the future. For right now, let's give a big shout out to our partners at Underdog Fantasy Sports, the absolute best place to play fantasy sports. The pickup game is as easy as choosing higher or lower on a variety of fighter stats like significant strikes, knockouts, takedowns, and fight time.
Yeah, and like always, guys, all new users sign up for code P4P will receive up to $250 in bonus cash and a pick'em special. Underdog is available in 30-plus states, including California, Texas, Arizona, and Florida. Support the show and click the link below to get started.
Oh, man, Henry, you know what I said? There will be more L's in the future. So don't get too happy because you were able to inch by me on this one. But there will be more. And hopefully we can get the middleweight champion of the world, Dricus du Plessis, to come and have a conversation with us, because there needs to be ultimate respect put on this man's name. He's done so much work to get to where he is. He put on a fantastic performance last night. And we got to give props to that. But for now, Henry, I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
Man, we are out.